Just got it shut off. Go ahead.
Okay. That's much better. Okay, so good afternoon, folks, and welcome back to the Torah Teachers Roundtable Tanakh edition. And we had a problem with Mark's microphone, but I think it's fixed now. And the hurricane has abated, which is good news. Anyway, we're talking about the book of Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah chapter 51 at this point. More of the judgment against Babylon. And as I've been saying a lot, and I think we're going to see it again today, this ought to sound really familiar. And for those with eyes to see, it ought to be a major concern as well. Anyway, I understand from the discussion that happened just beforehand that they were asking the other two folks. We got both of them on board, Ken and MP here with me. Would like me to read from verses 25 through 28 in chapter 51, and then I'll go to MP and let him comment on that. So it says this, Behold, I am against you, O destroying mountain, who destroys all the earth, says Yahuwah. And right there, okay, I will stop briefly and say, there you go. Destroys all the earth sounds a whole lot like the Biden regime. Can't stay off a bike, but they can destroy the economy. They can destroy the biggest debt bubble in history. They've destroyed the supply chain. They're destroying the world's military, and they're trying to get nuclear war started as well. So that fits. Oh, by the way, and they're destroying people with the bioweapons they're unleashing. Who destroys all the earth, says Yahuwah, and I will stretch out my hand against you, roll you down from the rocks and make you a burnt mountain. They shall not take from you a stone for a corner, nor a stone for a foundation, but you shall be desolate forever, says Yahuwah. Set up a banner in the land, blow the trumpet, the shofar, among the nations. Prepare the nations against her, call the kingdoms together against her, Ararat, Mini, Ashkenaz. Appoint a general against her, cause the horses to come up like the bristling locust. Prepare against her the Goyim, the nations, with the kings of the Medes, its governors, and all its rulers, all the land of his dominion. And I'm going to read just one more verse or so because we got to get to the end of a sentence at least. And the land will tremble in sorrow, for every purpose of Yahuwah shall be against Babylon, to make the land of Babylon a desolation. Matter of fact, without inhabitant, it says. So let's pause there. And Mark, good afternoon. Let's go to you.
Good afternoon. Yeah, good to be here, too. Looking forward to seeing my entire alive family this weekend. My daughter passed a few years ago, but my three sons all going to be here all at once. This is going to be fun. That's anyway, cool. So verse 25 to 28, rather. Yah here calls Babylon a destroying mountain, which destroys the entire earth. I do not think that Nebuchadnezzar got to a point where he could destroy the earth, though he probably could have annihilated any pretenders to his throne at any time of his rule. But Nimrod, the original king of Shinar, may have, and he is thought to have built the Tower of Babel to challenge Yah. Now, Babel, Babylon, was in the plains between the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers, and I do not think there were many mountains in that area, but the city Nimrod built was supposed to be quite high and with a huge base, kind of like a step pyramid, that reached into the clouds. That may be true, and what Yirmiyahu was alluding to or not. At any rate, it looks like Yah may be likening Babylon's king to Nimrod and is at least considering bringing his judgment on the area as a response to Nimrod's actions. Did Babylon burn to the ground? I don't think so. Verse 26 may be intimating that, though. The leftovers of the city won't be useful for building any new town. Knocking the building stones over could destroy their edges, perhaps make them rounded and unstackable, making them hard to use as walls in the future. If that were the case, it would be much easier for future attackers to defeat the city, which is what seems to be going on in verse 27, where the call has gone out to all the city, nations round about, raise your flags, blow assembly, prepare to overrun Babylon. Ararat and Mine are both in Armenia, which is just over the Turkish border with today's Azerbaijan, just south of Georgia. Mount Ararat is in that neighborhood. It's quite a way north of where Babylon was, but following the Tigris toward the Persian Gulf will take you within a drive and a three-wood of town. Now, what were rough caterpillars? Rough is from the Hebrew 5569, Samar, which is from the Hebrew 5568, Samar, to be erect, standing upright. Caterpillar, is from the Hebrew 3212, Yalak, which means to feed greedily, like a locust feeding on vegetation. Caterpillars and locusts can wreak havoc on a crop early in its fruit's development, which is, I think, what Yah is alluding to. Now, in verse 28, it seems to be inviting the next conqueror, that is Media, the Medo-Persian, pretty much Armenia, just south of Georgia and the headwaters of both rivers, Tigris and Euphrates, to get a taste of what they'll take from Babylon. Persia will be coming with everything they have to defeat Babylon on the invitation of Yah himself. The word the KJV translates prepare is from the Hebrew 6942, kadash, which means to cleanse. Adjust the vowel points and you get kodesh, holy, set apart, as in Ruach HaKodesh, the Holy Spirit. So Yah Avinu is telling Mashiach Yeshua to cleanse the nations that are coming to conquer Babylon for him. For as long as they do his will, they will be set apart unto him. They will be able to stay that way if they start going in his ways. Chances aren't very good that that will happen, but it could. All of Babylon will be defeated by the Medes and the Persians, and it will be devastated. And that's what I've got through verse 28.
Okay, let's say good afternoon to Ken, and why don't you pick it up somewhere in there, and good to see you again.
Good to hear you fellas as well, and I wish a warm welcome to all those listening out there in the world. So I'll start off here with verses 25 through 26. Yah goes on regarding Babylon and Chaldea in these two verses, 25 and 26, to say that they, as destroying mountains, that had been destroying or spoiling all of the earth, will become a burnt mountain. Now, he also gives, he being Yah, also gives the imagery of Babylon rolling down like into a stone from on high. And the cause of this was from the stretching out of his hand as an action of striking. And thus Yah strikes, and Babylon comes tumbling down, and left charred in the end as a burnt mountain. And with the keeping of likening Babylon to stone and mountain, Yah prophesies not to allow any rebuilding via any cornerstone or foundation, but to be destroyed and made desolate forever. Yah is very exact, as usual, and all that he says is just sometimes we have to figure out what is he saying and, you know, put two and two together to see the details. Now, this is true of the actual Babylon of that day when Yirmiyahu was on this earth, and the world should see its metaphoric entity of today, in which Revelation speaks of being brought down from its pedestal in these end of days. And I'm speaking of Babylon, the great beast, possibly today's beast system, that we all are beginning to wonder as to how great it is and if we, as a people, are able to bring it down. So recall these words in Revelation 13, verse 4, where it's written, "And they worshipped the dragon which gave power unto the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" And if we do consider today's beast system as such a Babylon in this day, we may consider that this system came into power at the beginning of year 2021, you know what I'm speaking of. We're talking about the change in the presidency and what's really changed gears throughout the world. This was just the trigger, so to speak. And the very next verse, which I just read in there in Revelation 13, the very next verse seems to start a ticker that can be associated with this. Now, Revelation 13:5 says, "And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. Now, I truly see such lies and blasphemies being spoken unto and performed upon this earth and all of its inhabitants. Thus, I'm considering that this countdown to the end of such power and authority today may just end 4 months before the 2024 presidential election. Just possibly, you know, if we're looking at 42 months from the time in which things changed, which was the new presidency, and if this were true, woe to all of us continuing to live through even worsened turmoil than what we're presently going through. And I will be praying that once again, Yah will make Babylon a burnt mountain to be rolled off her place from on high. The pain and the suffering going on today is likened to no other day in history knew or knows the truth, which is constantly being hidden from our eyes and our ears, no thanks to media and other resources out there, which are bought and paid for. And it's only to grow worse as bodily injections upon us and our children continue. And the result of such injections takes its toll. And so, you know, the more I think about that, all I can think of is, oh, woe to this earth. And yeah, I'm speaking of its inhabitants. But anyway, I wanted to make that correlation in these two verses, because I can really see this cycle occurring today, the same cycle that happened in that day. It really feels like this is it again. And this could be that end of day cycle. It really could be.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right.
Now,
if you guys are ready to
actually,
read.
And I'll get into it the next time I get the mic, so go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, if you
go
guys
ahead
are
MC,
ready,
what were you saying?
If you're ready to read on, I'm going to continue with the next verse. And in the process of doing that, I want to just mention a story that really kind of irritated me. I saw it this morning. I got some friends that are Navy vets. You probably, I'm sure, know some as well. And I guess I saw something about my alma mater today that was kind of shocking and disgusting that I'm not proud of. Maybe this is the way Navy vets are feeling. Anyway, there was a story up online having to do with a video that's been released by the U.S. Navy for Pride Month. Featured a couple of blithering idiots dressed in rainbow costumes talking to sailors like they were four-year-olds about pronouns. You need to know how to use pronouns. And essentially, it was just absolutely, it was beyond disgusting, but it was the fact that they were treating these people like they were idiots, and they had to know how to use pronouns because that's what really matters. And, you know, yours truly is thinking, this is what the U.S. Navy has on its plate. This is the top priority. Is, you know, in a land where they're literally destroying the Navy with the poison poke, the economy's melting down, their supply chains are broken, they can't deliver weaponry that works. What weaponry does exist is being sent to Ukraine, which meanwhile the rest of the world is preparing for World War III. Okay, well, here we go. So I'm going to read verse 30 and listen to this and see if it doesn't kind of leap off the page. The mighty men of Babylon have ceased fighting. No, they're too busy doing pride crap. They have remained in their strongholds. Their might has failed. They became, I'm going to read this correctly and notice one thing here. They became women. It says that. They became women. What, they go transgender? What's interesting is, if you read it in the King James, it says they became like women. But the word like is in italics. That was not the original word. That was added by the translators. They became women. The translators probably said, oh, that could never happen. Well, they didn't know today's Navy, which is paying for transgender operations. And here we are, guys.
That's right.
If there's anything that ought to say, whoa. You know, Ken a minute ago was talking about Babylon. Mark, you were ancient Babylon and what was happening multiple thousands of years ago. I'm going to suggest that the real prophecy here, while it's existed and been obvious before, should be more obvious today. Let me finish verse 30. Okay, their might has failed. They became women. They have burned her dwelling places. The bars of her gate are broken. Just as the bars of her are broken, the word gate is added too. And again, if you just read it, the bars of her are broken. Maybe since she became a transgendered something rather than mighty men of war, that's part of the deal. One runner will run to meet another, one messenger to meet another, to show the king of Babylon that his city is taken on all sides. The passages are blocked. The reeds they have burned with fire, and the men of war are terrified. I'll read one more verse here, verse 33. Thus says Yahuwah Zevuot, Elohim of Israel, the daughter of Babylon is like a threshing floor. It's time to thresh her. Yet a little while, and the time of her harvest will come. So let's pause there. Ken, we'll go to you this time.
I still needed to catch up a little bit. I have to comment on verses 27 and 28.
Okay.
So let me jump back here. in 27 and 28, we see Yah calling to arms yet again by setting up a standard and blowing the trumpet of war, preparing for battle those nations in the vicinity that will swoop down from the north and destroy Babylon and Chaldea. Again, Yah points directly to the kings of the Medes as partaking in this great event in which, from what I'm reading, many nations rise up against Babylon. Now, again, can we not see this action being called upon today? Is Yah not calling upon all of us, wherever we are in this day, amongst all of the nations, to stand up against such tyranny? Now, I know firstly it says the armies of the north, and you know, I've heard a lot of Christian understandings through many a year that often the armies of the north are sometimes referred to as from the Soviet Union or Russia. And it's funny how that seems to be the one army in this world that is saying no to the tyranny and no to this this great power upon this earth.
And that's why Putin is the guy who's making everything bad for the United States.
Exactly. Yep.
And it's such a lie. It's such a lie. He's probably the only guy that's even straight over there. But go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's because evil is being called good and good is being called evil. And that's the same with Putin and what he's doing. I mean, the first thing he did was run in and try to capture and bring down all of these bio labs throughout the country. And that's because he didn't want the earth being slaughtered with, you know, these nasty viruses and all this. And not to mention it's right on his border, you know. And plus, he knows that that's leading to other illnesses in those areas. It's leading to a lot of child confiscation and abuse, et cetera. I mean, it's just so much wickedness going on. It's just terrible. But anyway, this is going on. All of this is going on, it seems like, in every land across the earth today where people's freedoms are being stolen. Lives are being lost, wars are being started and funded without the people's consent. And Yah here is calling for the people to come together to prepare and let it be known via a standard raised up in their land, as he is calling us in this day to stand up against the tyranny and the wickedness. So I can see him saying this in that day, and I feel like we should be hearing it in this day as well. We should be hearing him calling us to stand up and to do something against the wickedness and not to sit and just allow it all to happen, because that's what a lot of peoples around this world are doing today. in these other nations. I mean, you see poor Australia without their guns. Oh, they're just being, you know, whipped around and made to do whatever the government wills, you know. There are many other countries that are right behind them, too. I mean, even Canada. You can see Canada is not doing so well either. There is not much freedom there anymore. But there's a lot of other nations that we don't hear about, you know, like throughout Africa, throughout Asia, et cetera. So this is a worldwide thing going on. And yes, in that day, Babylon was a very great empire. And this was the downfall of it. And again, I believe that's why Revelation points to it, to this term Babylon, because it's likened to what's going on today. And I truly see such things being mirrored, you know, like another cycle of what we're reading here in Yirmiyahu. Now, I'll jump to verses 29 to 32. Now, through these verses in 29 to 32, Yah spends a few breaths detailing the condition of Babylon during her destruction. He states that the land will tremble and sorrow, which I believe he is being figurative of all of the peoples that are under Babylonian control. They too are to feel the wrath of Yah, in that they too will be a part of what is to become desolate. As long as they continue in her sins, they too will fall. So he then focuses on the mighty men of war to note that they are frightened and are hiding, even to be compared or being made a woman in her condition. Without the strength of mighty men of war, a nation is truly lost and cannot be defended, especially if those mighty men of war are women in her state of the family, et cetera, or state of businesses back in that day. You know, think about that. Not in this day, but this is, again, back in that day, what was a woman doing? Mostly she was in the house. If you had a mighty man in the house, I think you would think he was either lost in the mind or, he truly was becoming a woman like they are today, right, MC? Anyway.
Yeah. They're not real women, remember. They're just fake women, but that's good enough for Big Brother.
Sure. Right on. He goes on to forecast the condition of the city, providing plenty of concerned witnesses in various parts of the city and land, rushing.
Hey, we're at the break. We'll finish up there.
God, I'm grieving, and I pray, don't take me soon, because I am here for a reason. Sometimes in my tears I drown, but I never let it get me down. So when negativity surrounds, I know something, either love turns around, because all my life I've been waiting for, I've been praying for the people to say that we don't want to fight no more, there'll be no more war, and our children will pay.
Yeshua, double me and you, I keep the peace. Jabba's still 6,000 years old, it's not new. Challenge did it.
All right. We are back, folks. Second half of the first hour now of the Torah Teachers Roundtable. We're talking about Jeremiah, or Yirmiyahu, chapter 51, and a whole lot of verses that, yes, they ring true in history. They certainly ring true in the scriptures, and they ought to ring true if you watch the news, because just about every one of these judgments against Babylon at least fits as well today as it did at any time in history, in your host's opinion here, one of your three hosts' opinion anyway. So with that, let's go back to Ken. We interrupted him at the bottom of the hour and let him finish up.
Yeah, I'm with you, MC. I see the same thing going on. And I'm glad that we're all commenting on this exact fact and sharing with those listening, you know, the conditions that are in the world today likened to what was going on in Yirmiyahu's day. So it's a good thing that that we are such witnesses in this day. Now, what I hadn't quite finished was just in stating towards the end of verses 29 to 32 how Yah forecasts the condition of the city, providing plenty of concerned witnesses in various parts of the city and the land, rushing to inform the king of the fallen condition and destruction taking place throughout. So they're literally, you know, rushing here and there, which, when I consider that movement, you know, rushing here and there, I can't help but remember, reading such words in the past about, I believe, the devil himself, when Yah asked where he was, and I believe this was in the scroll of Job.
Yep.
Am I right in that? Yeah.
Yes, you're correct.
Where he was sort of going to and fro in the earth.
Yep.
And I recall, I want to say there was something about Cain as well, going to and fro, as a vagabond. And I've seen it in a couple of instances. And it's usually, like I said, it's not a clean individual. I mean, even for example, I believe the unclean bird that Noah let out of his ark, the first one, something about he went to and fro, right? Yeah, but anyway, that term just gives me that feeling that, oh, this is something unclean, you know, and that's really what was going on too. This is a very unclean nation that is about to be brought down. And thus there is uncleanness going on. And that even includes the rushing back and forth, you know, of these messengers to the king. So anyway, that's what I had through verse 32. So I'll go ahead and turn it over to MP so he can catch up a little.
I'm going to jump ahead by one verse. What do you think of that?
Hey, go for it.
Okay. All right. Verse 29 to 33. That the land itself will tremble and sorrow gives me the impression that there will be earthquakes that might cause hot springs or something like that to erupt. Tremble is translated from the Hebrew 7493 ra'ash, which means to move violently, to undulate. Okay? Sounds like a violent shaker, which the region can experience and does pretty regularly. Sorrow is translated from the Hebrew 2342, that is hul or hil, depending on to enter or to enable. This could be describing an earthquake in which the surface shakes violently or possibly opens up to swallow stuff. Whatever happens, Yah's purpose will be performed against the latter-day Babylon. Remember that Babylon's judgment is coming because the last three or four emperors had basically dissed Yah and started to persecute Yehuda. I have to assume that the Jews had begun to show how much more adept they were at administration and business than were the local talent, and they were drawing more business, and correspondingly more success and influence in the land whose people had conquered them. The local businessmen may have gotten together and worked out deceptions and twistings of facts, a la the mainstream press these days, to turn powerful Babylonians, that is, politicians, against them. Kind of like how enough Republicans in the Senate helped their socialist friends to override a veto, probably vetoed by Donald J. Trump, of an anti-Second Amendment Supreme Court decision. That is my Ohio Republican Senator, Rob Portman, who, by the way, is retiring, was one of the turncoats. He's retiring. He's got nothing to lose. So why not? Had he been running for re-election, he'd have voted to let the verdict stand. Yeah, please requite Rob Portman fivefold for his intentional error. I'll leave it up to you, Abba, how to decide how. Okay, now, but do it relatively quickly and openly so that we can point it out to people the next time we have an issue like this. That would be just wonderful. Now, in verse 30, it says that the mighty men, that is the Hebrew 1368 Gibor, to overpower or to control by superior strength, have forborne. That's the Hebrew 2308 Chadal, which means to limit or refrain from activity. Okay, so it says the mighty men have forborne to fight. Those who were expert at war refused to fight and remained in their bunkers, cowering in fear, like the average girly man of today. Our society is so like the society of Babylon, it's actually frightening to read and comment on, because I can see this very thing happening in the United States of America by the time we finish the program tonight, due to the decided lack of real men. Mark Call and Ken and I are pretty old, all in or near our 60s. But I think we would all take up arms to protect our nation and communities from invaders, whether foreign or local domestic. I'm retired Navy, and I would do whatever I had to do to help fight for my city, state, or nation. Now, verse 31.
You notice, Mark, I left you out You notice there, I left you out when I was just in the Navy a minute ago. So I don't know if you had any reaction to that or not.
Oh, it ticks me off no end. I was agreeing with you the whole way. It really bugs me no end that the Navy is doing what all the other armed forces say about the Navy. A bunch of wussy boys, you know, who it just really bugs me that the Navy is actually doing that stuff. Anyway, back to my notes. Verse 31. Three of the first five words in verse 31 are derived from the Hebrew 7323 reots, okay, which means to run or to move rapidly. The runner from one post will run to meet another at another post to tell him that one end of the city is taken by the enemy. Stone Stenach says that the city is taken from end to end. So one runner is running to tell another runner that the city is taken from end to end, and when they get to the king's house, he's already gone. Every escape is already closed to these watchmen in verse 32. Every fighting man is afraid. The root here is the Hebrew 926 rahal, which means to tremble, to palpitate, or to be shocked. Okay? A fighting man who realized that the CO had taken it on the lam and left all his men high and dry just might be in shock. I have no doubt that the leadership in D.C. today would abandon their constituents in a New York minute to save their own skin. In verse 33, Yatzevaot Elohai Yisrael says, Bat Bavel, the daughter of Babel, is like a threshing floor, and it's time to thresh her. Before long, it'll be time to harvest and prep her for next year's planting. Take a guess at what they decided to do. If you think it was to get out of Dodge at the first opportunity, you are wrong. If my ship had been torpedoed, and I found that the captain had boarded the lifeboat first and left everyone else behind, and I survived it all, I'd have testified at his courts-martial and tracked him to the ends of the earth to bring him to military justice. Desertion is a capital offense. A commanding officer may not abandon his ship or his command until every living person is accounted for and or rescued. Yatzevaot is bringing his judgment down on Babylon for exactly the kind of behavior that they evince. That's what's happening in the Babylon that we're reading about, and it's also what's going to be happening to the Babylon that we all live in. Because the commanding officer, that adult in the White House is being just like this. That's all I got through verse 33.
Okay. Ken, are you ready?
You could go. Could you read on through at least verse 35 for us?
I am set. Yeah, let's read on.
Please. Go to 38.
Okay. Okay.
So we finished with 33. Thus says Yehovah Zevuot Elohim of Israel, the daughter of Babylon is getting ready to be threshed, and her time of harvest is going to come. Then it says, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, has devoured me. He has crushed me. He has made me an empty vessel. He has swallowed me up like a monster. He's filled his stomach with my delicacies. He's spit me out. Let the violence to me and my flesh be upon Babylon. This is what the inhabitant of Zion will say, and my blood be upon the inhabitants of Chaldea, Jerusalem will say. Now, interestingly, Ken likes to point this out. When I read these verses and I see the similarity in words, I'm thinking about the warning to the watchman of the wall. If you fail to warn, then those people's blood who die, their blood will be on your head. And that's what these people are saying.
And by the way,
go ahead.
The fact that that he repeats himself twice or three times in these verses is also something that you got to watch out for. When Yah repeats himself, he means it. Okay, it's gonna happen.
He has a point that he's making. Therefore, thus says Yahuwah: Behold, I'll plead your case and take vengeance for you. I'll dry up her sea and make her springs dry. Babylon shall become a heap, a dwelling place for jackals, an astonishment and a hissing without an inhabitant. They shall roar together like lions. They shall growl like lions' whelps. In their excitement, I will prepare their feasts. I'll make them drunk that they may rejoice and sleep a perpetual sleep and not awake, says Yahuwah. I'm going to read one more verse, MP, and then I'll go to you. I'll bring them down like lambs to the slaughter, like rams with male goats. Okay, let's pause there and go to Mark.
Okay, I'm looking at verses 34 to 38, and the Zimmer has this on 34 and following. It says, Nebuchadrezzar, they got the R in there instead of the N, king of Babylon, has devoured me. He has crushed me. These are the words of Zion and Jerusalem. Although Judah had sinned and deserved Elohim's punishment, Nebuchadnezzar's greed and cruelty were disproportionate, and Elohim would justly punish him in order to avenge his people and his city. Now, Yah is still speaking at the... This is me talking now. Yah is still speaking at the, to the same audience as in the last section. While he is bringing judgment against Babylon for their treatment of his people, Yehuda, Yehuda had been judged by Yah through their destruction and captivity, and Babylon is being judged for the way it treated Yehuda during the journey into exile and in the beginning of the exile. It was when Daniel and Shema, that's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, served Nebuchadnezzar, that the king saw their hearts and service to Yah through their service to him. And that brought a change to how Yehuda was generally treated for the remainder of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, as can be seen in the book of Daniel. After Nebuchadnezzar croaked, things began to change, and with each successive emperor, Daniel and Shema had to prove themselves once again faithful to Yah through their faithful service to the king. And that took a while to make itself known to Nebuchadnezzar's successors. Yehuda was assumed to be rebellious, and undoubtedly some were, but the priestly prophetic leadership was not. And it only took a few weeks, very few weeks or months, to convince the king of their faithfulness and service to the king and the nation. Unfortunately, after Nebuchadnezzar's reign, the emperors got less and less godly and more self-aggrandizing, as is the wont of most humans. In verses 35 and 36 speak of what Babylon does to Yah's body, Israel. What Yirmiyahu says here against Babylon is something that I think Yeshua could have said against the contemporary successor of Babylon, his contemporary successor of Babylon, Rome, and quite possibly the Rome collaborating Sanhedrin of his day. And it says this in John chapter 11, verses 43 to 52. And when he thus had spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes. Did you get that? He's bound hand and foot with grave clothes. How did he come out? He didn't walk out. He didn't crawl out. All right? And his face was bound about with a napkin. Yeshua said unto them, Loose him and let him go. Then many of the Jews which came to Mary and had seen the things which Yeshua did believed on him. But some of them went their ways to the Pharisees and told them the things Yeshua had done. Then gathered the chief priests and the Pharisees a council and said, What do we? For this man doeth many miracles. If we let him thus alone, all will believe on him, and the Romans shall come and take away both our place and our nation. Notice which came first, their place, not their nation. Okay, and one of them, Caiaphas, being the high priest that same year, said unto them, Ye know nothing at all, nor consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, and that the whole nation perish not. And this spake he not of himself, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Yeshua should die for that nation, and not for that nation only, but also for also he should gather together in one the children of Elohim who were scattered abroad. Now, does the Sanhedrin's reaction sound anything like the collaborators of Yirmiyahu, Daniel, Shema's days? I see it. Here are just a few of the references TSK provides, Treasury Scripture Knowledge. Jeremiah 50 and verse 9, For lo, I will raise and cause to come up against Babylon an assembly of great nations from the north country, and they shall set themselves in array against her. From thence she shall be taken, her arrows as of a mighty expert man. Their arrows as a mighty expert man. None shall return in vain. Then in Jeremiah 50 and verse 14, Put yourselves in array against Babylon round about. All ye that bend the bow, shoot at her, spare no arrows, for she hath sinned against Yah. Then in chapter 50 and verse 26 of Jeremiah, it says, Come against her from the uttermost border, open her storehouses, cast her up as heaps, and destroy her utterly. Let nothing of her be left. While the verses are addressed to Yirmiyahu's Babylon a few years before the fall of Persia, but they could as easily have been directed against the Sanhedrin, circa 30 to 60 CE, as they persecute any follower of Yeshua and his Talmudim. In verse 36 of our chapter, Yah himself says, I will plead thy cause. This is, in my opinion, none other than the resurrected Yah Yeshua, complete with nail, spear, and thorn scars, speaking. And he is speaking this same judgment against all of his enemies from Hasatan in the garden to Hasatan in Revelation 20, verses 1 and 2, and 7 through 10, which I'm going to read to you. And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Hasatan, and bound him 1,000 years. Verse 7, And when 1,000 years are expired, Hasatan shall be loosed out of his prison, and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom as the sand of the sea. And they went up on the breadth of the earth, and encompassed the camp of the saints about, and the beloved city, and fire came down from Elohim out of heaven and devoured them. That is Gog and Magog, not all the people that were camped around the sea. And the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone with the beast and the false prophet and shall be tormented day and night forever and ever. Never going to stop. Back to my narrative. This will take just another minute or two. Back to our narrative. The destruction of Babylon in Yirmiyahu's time, the last curse he pronounces against Babylon is that he will dry up her sea and also her springs. So no ocean or lake water, no flowing springs for her to draw any water from at all. Think about where Babylon was situated, on the banks of the Euphrates, not more than a few miles from the Tigris, which is the reason the original settlers settled there. Abundant surface water and probably springs everywhere. And the reason that Yah is not an ogre for judging Babylon with the drying up of all the sources of water is because of its treatment of his people, Yehuda. And in verse 37, Babylon will become heaps, or dry rocks, in my opinion, the dwelling of abominable creatures, like maybe Sacramento or District of Columbia. Then verse 38 has an interesting alternate translation, where the KJV says they shall yell as lions' whelps. The word translated yell is the Hebrew 5286, which is na'ar, which translates to shake off or discard. When a female animal gives birth to a whelp, she will do anything to ensure its survival, even to her own death. When that happens, there is nothing her whelps can do but cry and cry to attract attention to be fed. Our commentary on verse 37 should tell you just how fruitless that will be. And I'm open to, I'm done up to verse 38.
All right. Are you ready, Ken?
Well, let me see if I can get my comments from verses 33 to 35 here before the break.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
You got about a minute and a half.
Okay. Yah, okay, in these three verses, 33 to 35, Yah seems to focus on who he calls the daughter of Babylon. Now, this term, daughter of Babylon, is also used in Psalm 137, Yeshayahu, or Isaiah 47, twice by Yirmiyahu, which we're presently reading, and in Zechariah chapter 2. Now, all of these passages speak of both, and by the way, I'm only referring to the Tanakh. All of these passages speak of both destruction and deliverance with regards to the daughter of Babylon. Even Micah 4 verse 10 speaks of the daughter of Zion, who shall go to Babylon to be delivered and redeemed there from the hand of thine enemies while as a woman in travail. Now, I feel like this term, daughter of Babylon, at least in the Tanakh, it's, and you really see it in the last instance of it in the book of Revelation. It's used as an end-time description of people who must go through a tribulation in order to reach his end result, you know, Yah's end result. In Yirmiyahu, he goes on to say, that the daughter of Babylon. I'll finish up afterwards.
I thank God I'm breathing. And I pray, don't take me soon. Cause I am here for a reason. Sometimes in my tears I drown. But I never let it get me down. So when negativity surrounds, I know someday the Lord will turn around. Because all my life I've been waiting for. For the people to say that we don't wanna fight no more. There'll be no more war, and our children will pay. Sometimes I land under the moon.
Welcome to the Torah Teachers Roundtable, Apostolic Edition, with your hosts Rob Miller, Mark Petron, and yours truly, Mark Call. We hope you'll find this discussion entertaining, thought-provoking, and that above all, you'll be like the Bereans and search out the scriptures for yourself, see if these things be true.
I've been praying for the people to say that we don't want to fight no more. There'll be no more war, and our children will pay.
Welcome back now, second hour of the Torah Teachers Roundtable Tanakh Edition. We're going to finish with the chapter 51 of Jeremiah during this show for sure. But what we didn't finish was Ken's comments when he got interrupted at the top of the hour break. So we'll go back to him.
I was in the midst of pointing out how this term daughter of Babylon, which was used in four different places throughout Scripture. And by the way, that's throughout Scripture. It actually is not used in the Brit Hadashah or New Testament. This is only in four scrolls within the Tanakh. And so I feel like this term Daughter of Babylon is used as an end time description of people who must go through a tribulation in order to reach his end result. Now, in Yirmiyahu, he goes on to say that the daughter of Babylon was used and abused by the king of Babylon. Such details can be horrific when considered. I mean, crushed, it says, made an empty vessel, devoured, used to fill his belly, and then cast out, and violence upon the flesh. All of these are just horrific thoughts. And can we see that today? Oh, can we ever? Especially those poor children out there who are being dragged through such terrible things, the lusts of wicked men and wicked women of this earth, having their way, you know? A lot of that's going on today. And the inhabitants of Chaldea took part in this horror. Now, Yerushalayim, who are his people, shall say this. And apparently it's Yerushalayim or his people that are witnessing to their Elohim here. Okay. And that's what I see through 35. Now let me come in also on 36 to 40. Thus their Elohim will plead for her and seek vengeance. Now, he dries up her sea and makes her springs dry, which to me is figurative of her authority and power upon others being dried up and brought to naught. There will be no more sea of wickedness, nor will evil spring forth upon those who are willing to drink of her. Yah provides many metaphors to prophesy how broken and fallen and desolate she is made, to where all are just simply astonished. Again, so much like today, it would be such an astonishment to see such a great power that's wielding throughout the earth of today, how it could be brought down. Many will be amazed. And as lions in the heat of the day, they shall feast and they shall be brought to sleep, but never to awake. I like that. He provides other likenings, such as lambs to slaughter or rams with he-goats. The picture is made more and more clear that they are brought down to total destruction. So it's really nice to see Yah give us different renditions, all of which are likened to one another, but different understandings for each and every one of us. You know, one understanding, such as lambs to slaughter, for example, that one might ring more true in one person and less in another, but give one person a much greater understanding. Bring forth possibly many more thematic connections to help that one grow and understand such things and then share it with others. So this is kind of the way Yah works. He gives you lots of different pictures, some for one people, some for another. And sometimes, you know, again, we get Yah saying things time and time again, but if we notice the details, we might see that, he's actually giving us, different renditions and different versions for each and every one of us. And to me, that's just a wonderful thing. Anyway, that's what I have through verse 40. So I'll go ahead and let MP catch up if he may.
All right. I'll give it my best shot. Verses 39 through 43 is what I'm covering. Have we read all of that yet, Mark, or not?
We have read through about 40.
40. Okay, right. Well, then that's where I'll quit, or thereabouts anyway. Okay, so Azamra has this on verse 39. They say, "When they are heated, I will make feasts for them, and I will make them drunk. This is exactly what happened when Babylon fell in the reign of Nebuchadnezzar's grandson, Belshazzar, who made a great feast, became drunk, exhibited the captured vessels of the Holy Temple, and was killed that very night, as described in Daniel chapter 5. We'll look at that in a bit. Now, there refers to, I think, to the lion's whelps of verses 37-38. And their heat is translated from the Hebrew 27-25 ham, from the Hebrew 25-52 hamam, to glow or to project extreme heat. I think of someone who is feverish and experiencing hallucinations, and the rest of the description may bear that interpretation out. Here are a couple of cross-references from Treasury of Scripture Knowledge. In Jeremiah 25:27, it says, "Therefore thou shalt say unto them, Thus saith Yah Tzevaoth, the Elohim of Israel, Drink ye and be drunken, and spew and fall and rise no more, because of the sword that I will send among you." Then in Isaiah chapter 21, verses 4 and 5, "My heart panteth, fearfulness affrighted me. The night of my pleasure hath he turned into fear unto me. Prepare the table, watch in the watchtower, eat, drink, arise ye princes, and anoint the shield." Isaiah 21, 4 and 5. And then in Daniel chapter 5 and verses 1 to 5, "Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before 1,000. Belshazzar, whiles he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives and his concubines might drink therein. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of Elohim at Jerusalem, and the king and his princes and his wives and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, of brass and of iron, of wood and of stone. And in the same hour came forth," when that means right away, "came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against," that is opposite what I'm telling you, the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace, and the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. That last one makes my point above quite well, I think. The pagan king, Belshazzar, was using the cup reserved to the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim, and he used it as a personal wine glass. This is how it will be for all pagan kings who mess with Israel and Yah, her Elohim. Yah will get them good and drunk, may even make the wine super effective just this once, so that he makes a profound impression on them and those about them.
Oh, Mark.
Okay.
Hey.
Now, sleep. Go ahead.
If I can interrupt just a second, because you just brought up a new one I honestly had not ever thought about yet, at least not in this context. Not long ago, I mentioned the idea of the cup that's put in the hand of the adulterous, whoring wife that Yeshua drank in our place, arguably.
Yes.
And I hadn't thought about the cup this guy wasn't supposed to drink of, but no, I'm going to go ahead and get that cup, and I'm going to drink wine out of it. And you really want to drink out of that cup? Okay, well, here you go. I can't help but think maybe there's an element of that going on, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yah lets them go ahead and string out the rope that's going to hang them like that fast. Anyway, so sleep of perpetual sleep has two different words translated sleep. The first is yashan, to awaken or darken. And I think the meaning here is to darken, which is what happened to Belshazzar after he drank that wine and saw the writing on the wall. The other word translated sleep in verse 39 is shana, either with a hay or an aleph. The root has the aleph. Each pronounced the same way, shana. They both mean to reject or slash to distance, to hate. This is the sleep of the lost, who will not see the resurrection to life, but the condemnation and utter dissolution in the lake of fire. Yashen shana. If we live to the end of our natural lives, we will experience yashen, the weakness of physical death, but not the darkness of spiritual death. Of course, if we live until the translation in Revelation 20, we'll experience no death at all, but transition from life in this mortal meat suit to life in our resurrected flesh. That's what I got through verse 39, and I'll let it go at this, and let Ken take it up.
Let's see. I commented through verse 40, so...
Let me get verse 40, then. It's only a couple of sentences.
Sure, okay.
In verse 30, what can happen if rams and he-goats meet up? There's liable to be some head-biting going on. The them of verse 40 has got to be the rams, he-goats, just before the lions show up. There will be quite a slaughter of rams and goats by those lions. That's what I got for verse 40. Go ahead.
Okay, are we set to...
Okay, hey, MC, can you read up a little bit?
Sure. So, it says in verse 41, how Shishak is taken. Oh, how the praise of the whole earth is seized. How Babylon has become desolate among the nations. The sea has come up over Babylon. She's covered with a multitude of its waves. Almost sounds like a tsunami bomb to me, guys. But hey, there's other ways that can happen. They could, for example, get the rewards of the rising sea level they keep talking about and jonesing for. Almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Anyway, she's covered with a multitude of its waves. Her cities are a desolation, a dry land and a wilderness, a land where no one dwells, through which no son of man passes. And now as I read that, I'm thinking, we have son of men, and then we have sons of something else. And there's a lot of those rolling around nowadays that look like not descendants of normal DNA. I'll leave it at that. I will punish Bel in Babylon, and I will bring out of his mouth what he has swallowed. And the nation shall not stream to him anymore. Yes, the wall of Babylon shall fall. You want to pause there?
That'll work fine for me. I'll just comment through, verse 43 anyway.
Then go ahead.
Okay. Verse 41, Shishak is a term only used in Yirmiyahu's writings and is supposedly a symbolic name. Now, I can only imagine that it's being symbolic of strength and might. I did notice in Brown Driver Briggs, it says something about thy fine linen. Also, a comment in Brown Driver Briggs saying, another name for Babylon apparently taken from the goddess Shak. I didn't know that that our Miami basketball player Shak was back in that day. But anyway, he's a big guy too, by the way.
Yes, he is.
But anyway, hey, certainly if you look at it as comparative to a goddess, fine linen only, you know, is worn by those who are elite. It still could be a symbolic of strength and might and, you know, kingship, etc. And thus, it's no wonder the world's surprise. Can we not liken this to today again, a time in which there seems no stopping the agenda that is going on today, ever increasing in influence and resolve? Those of us that are awake and aware of such authorities at play don't seem to have much faith in a competing entity. I mean, other than Trump, but of course he's being, you know, subdued greatly, as he has been ever since he even came into power, to bring back, such an entity to bring back truth, justice, or even normalcy, you know? And many are drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak, believing the lies that are being spewed. And thus this idea of the daughter of Babylon can be seen and felt today, I believe, in watching others partake in her lies and her desires. You know, the love for money abounds. The thirst to satisfy the flesh seems to be running amok. And thus we can imagine the surprise today of modern Babylon being brought down from its current height of power. So I just wanted to kind of put us in that thought or in that mindset, because you really would be surprised even today. So you can see how they may have been surprised in that day. And that's what I saw in verse 41. Verse 42, the imagery and the consistent pounding of waves upon a seashore is just visually poetic in my mind in relation to the enemies of Babylon. And the thematic connection with this is the fact that seas are likened to the nations on the earth. And thus one can also see this accuracy in that many nations will be brought against Babylon. Recall that without a foothold, the seas have a tendency to overcome, don't they? and the pounding of waves with below water currents just adds to the determination of that fact. If you're thinking about it, it's just a really good visually, poetic, verse, I believe. I really like it. Anyway, verse 43, I feel like Yah loves to give as many witnesses as required to literally pound a thought or understanding into souls that need reminders. You know, he reminds the listener and reader yet again that Babylon and the land thereof will be brought to desolation, to where no man remains, nor any man desires to even cross over such a land. This can easily be understood in the physical sense, but hopefully we can see the spiritual view as well. Yah desires his ways within the heart and soul to prevail. He desires to bring down and put away the ways of the wicked. And we know that this is his will, and thus it will be done. Now the day will come that all will desire his ways. That's what I'm seeing in this verse as well. And will walk in his ways forever. That's verse 43. I'm going to stop there because my next commentary covers a couple of verses, so I'll go ahead and let MP catch up.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
Verse 41, Shishak is taken, and it seems to refer to Babylon herself. This is referring to Babylon's fall, in my opinion. TSK says this: Shishak was probably an idol worshipped at Babylon, from which the city derived this name. And the festival which was being held when the city was taken, when they, that is the partiers, were heated with wine, was perhaps observed in honor of it. Now that's very likely what TSK had to say there. Now verse 42 speaks again of the sea, which I think refers to the nations coming to take Babylon. The multitude of waves covering Babylon probably speaks of the nations coming against her. Daniel chapter 9, verses 23 to 27 is probably referenced here. Here's what it says in Daniel 9, 23 to 27. At the beginning of thy supplications, the commandment came forth, and I came to show, for you are greatly beloved. Therefore, understand the matter and consider the vision. 70 weeks. Why did I get 20? Anyway, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city. Number one, to finish the transgression. And number two, to make an end of sins. Number three, to make reconciliation for iniquity. Number four, to bring an everlasting righteousness. Number five, to seal up the vision and prophecy. Number six, to anoint the most holy. And then number seven, how to know therefore and understand from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah the Prince is 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again in the wall, even in troublous times. And after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the Prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary and the end thereof with a flood. And unto the end of the war, desolations are determined. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, And in the midst of that week he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease, and for the overspreading of abominations he shall make desolate, even until the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. What are the 70 weeks for? Six things in verse 24. To finish transgression, to make an end of sins, to reconciliation for iniquity, bring in everlasting righteousness, seal up the vision and prophecy, and six, to anoint the most holy, and the seventh is to know and to fully understand. That's in chapter verse 25a. Now, verse 43, it looks as though the desolation of Babylon's cities will be complete, with nothing recognizable left to see, like a big hole in the earth where the city used to stand. Let's see if the Hebrew nouns can explicate the scene. The word cities is aria, from the Hebrew 5782 ear, which meaning to awaken or to absorb an external impulse. Etymological Dictionary, Biblical Hebrew's sixth definition is city enclosing all citizens, which is likely the one Yah is using here. The way I see this is that the destruction to Babylon's cities will be complete, but the destruction will not extend beyond their walls, which will also be crumbled. Only the guilty will be destroyed. Hallelujah. Two, a desolation from Hebrew 8074, shamam, which means to desolate or to lay waste. Number three, dry is from the Hebrew 6723, that is tzare, yod, hey, to wander in desolate places. So not only the cities, but the lands in between will be desolate. Number four, wilderness is the Hebrew 6160 Arabah, from the Hebrew 6150 Arav, which means a restraining barrier, with an alternative meaning definition of lying in wait to ambush. Arabah these days refers to the nature of the land, which is quite desolate and of little commercial value. The verse ends with the observation that men neither live here nor use it for any traffic. As an aside to today's usage of land like this, I think of the walking caravans of people from Central America through the Mexican desert to cross the U.S.-Mexico border without papers, which is the source of the pejorative that used to describe only poor Italian immigrants and their descendants, that is WOP, W-O-P, without papers.
Okay, well, we're without time. Out of the hours here, we'll be back.
And I pray, don't take me soon, cause I am here for reasons. Sometimes in my tears I drown, but I never let it get me down. So when negativity surrounds, I know someday the Lord will turn around, because all my life I've been waiting for, I've been praying for the people to say that we know what I'm like no more, there'll be no more, and our children will pay.
Do-do-do-dum-do-be-do-dum-dum. Come-a-come-a-dum-do-be-do-dum-dum. Come-a-come-a-dum-do-be-do-dum-dum. Keeping Torah's a joy to do. Let's stand alive, bound by the law. The 613 and many more. Don't they know what's really true? Yeshua died for me and you. I keep the peace. Some troubles too. 6,000 years old, it's not new. Challenged in motion.
All right, we are back, folks. Excuse me. Last segment for today of the Torah Teachers Roundtable. Jeremiah chapter 51, and more of the judgment against Babylon, or the greater Babylon metro area, perhaps, is the way we ought to put it today. In any case, when we got to the bottom of the hour, looks like MP wasn't quite finished yet, and as near as I can tell, he wants it back just briefly, so we'll go to him.
All right, thank you, Mark. Yeah, I'm just going to – I just got – a short paragraph. Anyway, as an aside to today's usage of land like this, it was talking about living here or not, or nor to use any traffic. They're not allowed to do that anyway. And as an aside for today's usage of land like this, I think of the walking caravans of people from Central America through the Mexican desert to cross the U.S.-Mexico border without papers, which is a source of the pejorative that used to be described only poor Italian immigrants and their descendants. It was called WAP, without papers. I wear that one as a badge of honor, by the way, as my Italian ancestors came with papers and worked their butts off. Seriously, my grandfather had no butt. And I still have to deal with the pejorative because most of the people using it were just ignorant, or are any who use such slang as a means of building themselves up in their own eyes. The same goes for such terms as kraut, mick, limey, slope, and any other pejorative. And by the way, using those terms actually shows one's disregard for objective truth. It isn't ignorance. Ignorance is excusable. These people aren't ignorant. They're just being as mean as they can be without getting too bad as to get punched in the face. Anyway, that's what I got through verse 43.
Okay. Ken, why don't you pick it up if you would like?
I need to comment through verse 45, which I don't think you've read yet. So would you like to read just a little further?
I would, and I'm going to comment on verse 45 as I read it too, because this is certainly one of those commandments that I suggest is repeated a number of places, including in Revelation and verse 18, chapter 18, verse 4, where it says, come out of her, my people. This says, my people, go out of the midst of her, and let everyone deliver himself from the fierce anger of Yahuwah, and lest your heart faint and you fear for the rumor that will be heard in the land, a rumor that'll come 1 year, and after that, another time, another year, a rumor and violence in the land. So basically, we're talking about rumors and violence in the land, and I saw a story today saying in Washington, D.C., they're putting up billboards that say, hey, be ready to come and riot. Let your anger be shown. They got to fear us. They don't fear the January 6th not rioters, but we're going to show them what real riots are in the District of Criminals. You know, the rumors are here, guys, and let everyone deliver himself from the fierce anger of Yahuwah is probably something we ought to be paying attention to as well. So let me read that verse, and I'll go to Ken. Violence in the land, ruler against ruler. Therefore, behold, the days are coming that I will bring judgment on the carved images of Babylon. Her whole land shall be consumed, and all her slain shall fall in her midst. Then the heavens and the earth and all that's in them shall sing joyously over Babylon, for the plunderers shall come to her from the north, says Yahuwah. All right. Wow, lots in there. Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, verses 44 through 45, I see Yah addressing a major influence in people's lives in this verse. Many have come together as one to worship another Elohim in this land called Babylon. But he will address this face to face so that no more will all come together as one to worship such falsehood. And though many nations are involved and have been a part of this great Babylonian empire, Yah desires to address each individual, as we see in verse 45. I believe his concern for each soul is directly addressed here, commanding those that are in him, the remnant, to leave this land and escape Yah's wrath. And of course, that's for each and every soul, it says, nefesh. Verse 46, have we heard such words before, huh? Yah warns that the upcoming events will weary the heart and that fear will overcome many. Thus he gives warning signs of that day, in which there will be violence and rumors of wars and nation against nation. I mean, recall this same warning is conveyed in both Matityahu or Matthew 24 and Mark 13, detailing that the end is near and not to fear. And thus, how events were in this day of the bringing down of Babylon, so this is this day as in with Yirmiyahu, so it will be again in the end of days with an end time entity called Babylon in the book of Revelation, chapters 14 through 18. Okay. And yeah, Yah works in cycles. And too often are we not told that there is nothing new. By the way, I meant to say, are we not told that there is nothing new under the sun? And to look back at events if we question what is to come. So I believe what we are reading in the end of the scroll of Yirmiyahu can be directly correlated with today's events, which very well could be end time events. Yeah. And thus we must consider, and we must, as MC had duly noted earlier, we must be watchers. This is what Yah desires, okay? He wants us to be watchers. Remember that also he tells his people things before he does them. And thus he tells us, he gives us understanding so that we can be watchers, you know? that's kind of the way it works. And this is Yah's desire. That's what I have through verse 46. I have another comment up through verse 49, but I guess I have to wait till MC to read up to that verse. So, did you have anything up to verse 46, MP?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Go right ahead. So,
in verses 44 through 49, actually, but I'm not going to read all of that. Yah judges and punishes the false gods, read demons, Hasatan, of Babylon, and actually names the one here as Bel. Wiki has a decent page on Bel at Bel Mythology. By the way, it also has one on Yahweh Mythology, don't you know? It's a wiki. What are you going to do? Anyway, I really like the way Yirmiyahu phrases verse 44. In his punishment of Bel, Baal, Yah is going to either reach down Bel's throat and remove all that he has swallowed up, or he is going to make him regurgitate it all up. Neither option would be pleasant. The surrounding nations had entered a religious lockstep with their Babylonian captors by worshiping Bel Baal. They may have kept it up for a short time while after Babylon's fall, but I think they started looking for alternatives, including Yah, or their ancestral gods. I mean, how great can a god be who allows his followers to be swallowed up by invaders, right? So Azamra has this on verse 45 and following. Go out from her midst, my people. During the period in which Jeremiah delivered the present prophecy, he was consistently urging the people of Judah to submit to Babylon and accept God's decree of exile. Yet at exactly the same time, he was prophesying that 62 years later, the Jews would leave Babylon. That's what Azamra has to say. Yirmiyahu had given this prophecy almost at the beginning of his ministry to Israel, according to Azamra, which is one of the reasons he spent so much time in the dungeons, don't you know, having human waste dumped on him in the king's palace. Now, in verse 45, Yah instructs his people to get out of Dodge, actually to get out of Babylon, so that he can do to Babylon what Babylon had done to Jerusalem. Perhaps you'll remember our study in the book of Revelation, lo, those many years ago, in Revelation 14 and verses 6 through 12, where it says, "And I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven, having everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and to every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, Fear Elohim, and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment is come. And worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. And there followed another angel, saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. And the third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if any man worship the beast and his image, and receive the mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of Elohim, which is poured out without admixture into the cup of his indignation. And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascends up forever and ever, and they have no rest day nor night, who worship the beast in his image, and whosoever receiveth the mark of his name. Here is the patience of the saints, and they that keep the commandments of Elohim, and the faith of Yeshua. It looks as though Baal, Bel worship, will be revived in the not-too-distant future, or it has been already, one or the other. Whether under that name or another, I have no idea. But the form of the religion will be like that of Babylon, even if the false god has changed his name, or his followers change it. See, there is truly nothing new under the sun. Bel, Baal, Ishtar, Ashtoreth, etc. worship is all the same, with certain establishments, or rather certain embellishments in various places and people. And Yah is going to end it. He's going to end all of it. In verse 46, have we read there? Yeah, I think we have. Yah is warning his people against being weak or frightened at the rumors that they might hear, because they are going to come one after another, usually getting more terrifying as they gather steam. The word rumor is taken each time from the Hebrew 8052 Shemua, from the Hebrew 8074 Shamam, as we saw earlier, to desolate or to lay waste. Have you ever heard that three's a charm? Well, there isn't much charm in this triple usage of the word meaning to lay waste or desolate. But this is a warning from Yah to his people to not be frightened of the rumors, but to trust him and to move on to verses 47 and 48. It is Babylon that will be judged, not Yehuda. I think Yah is trying to get them ready to go home to Judea and the Temple Mount. Perhaps they'd gotten too comfortable there in Babylon. May that be what Yah is doing to the U.S. today. The news is not good from the Yah followers' perspective, is it? Unless we look to unfulfilled prophecy of the end of days. It will get worse before it gets better, but when it gets better, it will be wonderful. Keep looking up. Our redemption truly does draw near. That's what I got through verse 46.
Amen, bro.
Okay, are you ready to read on, Ken, or you got anything else you want to toss in there at this point?
No, I was waiting for you to possibly read a couple more verses.
Okay, so as Babylon caused the slain of Israel to fall, so at Babylon the slain of all the earth shall fall. You who have escaped the sword, get away, don't stand still. Remember Yahuwah afar off and let Jerusalem come to your mind. We're ashamed, it continues, because we've heard reproach. Shame has covered our faces, for strangers have come into the sanctuaries of the house of Yahuwah. Behold, therefore, the days are coming, says Yahuwah, that I will bring judgment on her carved images, and throughout all her land the wounded shall fall, or shall groan, rather. Though Babylon were to mount up to heaven, and though she were to fortify the height of her strength, yet from me plunderers would come to her, says Yahuwah. And I'm going to read just a couple more verses, then we'll go to Ken. The sound of a cry comes from Babylon, and great destruction from the land of the Chaldeans, because Yahuwah is plundering Babylon and silencing her loud voice. Matter of fact, she's the only one that silences other voices right now, if you think about it. Though her waves near like great waters, and the noise of their voice is uttered, because the plunderer comes against her, against Babylon, and her mighty men are taken. Every one of their bows is broken, for Yahuwah is the Elohim of recompense. He will surely repay. Okay, let's pause. Go ahead, Ken.
Okay, let's see. Yeah, verses 47 to 49, it says, Yah will visit all of those who partook in Babylon's sin of the worship of other Elohim. and no part of the land will be missed, but all others throughout the world and the heavens will sing for joy at the falling of Babylon. And as Babylon had slain Yisrael, so will the world slain her. And of course, that's those coming from the north. In this case, what comes around goes around. Can you imagine the great outcry in the bringing down of today's Babylon? I mean, that should give you a good picture right there. We have so many people throughout the world being oppressed by this great beast system today. I have no doubt that the cries for joy would resound throughout the earth like never before today. And so if it's that great today and this is a cycle, then you know it was probably a pretty good resounding cry in that day. But again, that should give us some idea, at least those of us who are awake, how joyous we would be if this great beast system would fall. verse 50, I see those who remain to be a remnant that Yah deems as his people. They have escaped the sword, and he is instructing them to walk and not stand still. I would say this means not to become complacent, but to do whatever is needed to escape the wrath of man and his foolishness. Now, inwardly, Yah includes the idea of remembering him of old. This word afar off in the Hebrew is the word rakok, which can also imply through time and space. And thus I can see Yah speaking to the remnant to remember the Yahuwah of old and to let Yerushalayim come into your thoughts and into your heart. The Hebrew word for mind is actually lebeb, which is mostly translated as heart throughout scripture. So, this is, I think, a very, very spiritual, message, for all of us that we are to take and to put within us. Okay. To put in our hearts. Remember, of course we learn, then we put it in our hearts, and then we do, if you recall the words of Devarim or Deuteronomy 5 verse 1. This is the part where, once you put it in your heart, you're then able to do. And that's where Yah wants us at this point in time, or I should say in that point in time, in verse 50, okay? In that day with Yirmiyahu.
Amen.
Let me just do one more verse. I'm going to turn it over to MP just to give him a little bit of time before the break here. Verse 51, Yah further states that the remnant, they are confounded in understanding the shame and reproach. And you know, this feeling of confusion is caused by the strangers that have come and brought their own walk and worship upon the land and life of such a remnant. I can't help but picture this spiritually in that, you know, like, for example, my own sanctuary within myself, oftentimes is being bombarded by thoughts and ways of others. This sanctuary within is supposed to be prepared for him and only him to enter and make a dwelling place within. So imagine our sanctuary within being swarmed with wickedness and practices and thoughts that may much more, or maybe much more permanent within, if I got that out right. in such a case, Yah will not dwell within, okay, leaving one feeling confused, and surely could lead to a falling away if one continues in such confusion. So, I mean, I'm looking at this idea of the sanctuary as my sanctuary, the sanctuary within me. And I can see exactly what he means by this. You know, how shame and reproach can most certainly be understood and felt and lead to confusion when you find out it comes to your realization that you're partaking in the things going on around you. And it truly can influence you, you know, what's going on in this world if you pay too much attention to it, you know, to what they want you to pay attention to. See, there's the whole problem. They're leading each and every person in this day to pay attention to what they want you to pay attention to. And that's a true fear that I have because it really does affect people. In all the wrong ways. So I'm going to stop there up to verse 51 and let MP take over. Go ahead, MP.
Okay. I'm in verse 47. And in verse 47, we get a glimpse of the judgment to come on Babylon's, that is the world systems, false gods, and there, that is the world's systems lands. Now look at Jeremiah 25, 12 to 17, where it says this. When 70 years are accomplished, I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith Yah, for their iniquity and the land of the Chaldeans, and I will make it perpetual desolations. And I will bring upon that land all my words which I have pronounced against it, all that is written in this book, which Jeremiah hath prophesied against all the nations. For many nations and great kings shall serve themselves of them also. And I will recompense them according to their deeds and according to the works of their own hands. For thus saith Yah, Elohim of Israel, unto me, take the wine cup of his fury at my hand, and cause all the nations to whom I send thee to drink it. And they shall drink, and be moved, and be mad because of the sword that I will send among them. Then took I the cup at Yah's hand, and made all the nations to drink unto whom Yah had sent me. In verses 48 and 49, I think Yah is delivering the opening line of the final song against Babylon. The word KJV translates for Babylon actually means against Babylon, as can be seen in the rest of the verse, since spoilers are coming against Babylon not to help her out, but to help themselves to whatever of value is left. These spoilers are coming from the north, which would likely be the Scythians, who, believe it or not, and assuming that Wiki has its act together, inhabited the regions we see in the news almost daily in these last few months, Russia and Ukraine. Very Eastern Europe and very Western Asia, north of both the Black and the Caspian Seas.
All right, and we're out of time, guys. We'll finish 51 next week. Thanks a lot. Shalom, folks.